This is an encore presentation from the Veritas Vault. Enjoy.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Exopolitics, paranormal phenomena, and deep analysis of current world events. From somewhere in the desert, between Area 51 and Roswell, blasting across the planet, the Manticore Network proudly presents Veritas, because the truth will set you free.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I think it's time to open the books on the question of government investigations of UFOs. We ought to do it really because it's right. We ought to do it because the American people, quite frankly, can handle the truth. And we ought to do it because it's the law.
Be skeptical. Do be as skeptical as you want, but by all, don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world and a warm welcome to another edition of the Veritas Show, where you listen because you don't want to believe, you listen because you want to know. And I sincerely thank you for tuning in once again. A big welcome to our first-time listeners. James Sparks has had experiences with non-human intelligent beings since 1988. Initially an unwilling abductee, once he was able to put aside his rage, overcome his fear, and accept that he was encountering some sort of technologically advanced beings from which he could not escape, his experiences transformed. Jim has approximately 90% conscious awareness of his experiences, giving him clear memories of amazing technology that includes time travel, invisibility, multidimensional aspects of reality, and manipulation of gravity and electromagnetic fields, as well as information as to why these visitors are here and making their presence known to ordinary people. After a mass abduction in 1996, everything changed for Jim, and he was initiated into the role of participant rather than abductee. The son of hardworking Italian-American parents, Jim was raised in Florida, where his childhood memories were of a vast unknown filled with strange and interesting creatures, the Everglades. He graduated high school in South Florida and studied business and real estate at community colleges in both Miami and Houston. Although his abduction experiences began while in Texas in 1988, he would travel to North Carolina as a successful land developer. With us tonight, from one desert to another desert, Jim Sparks. Hello, Jim, and welcome to the Veritas Show.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Jim, on this show, we like to become familiar with our guests before we talk about their stories. Before we get into your multi-decade odyssey, can you describe your childhood, the general description of your upbringing, education, and your work experience? I want the audience to get to know Jim Sparks, the man.
Oh, sure. Well, I was raised in South Florida. And I had a very lucky childhood because I grew up in a time in the 50s and into the 60s where it was not overdeveloped. Our front yard ended where the Everglades began, and it made a very, very extremely natural setting. So every animal that you can fathom or imagine that would be relative to the swamp and the in the open air and the beautiful woods is the way I was raised. my family. My father was a hardworking person. He grew up in New York, and he originally was from Sicily. My mother grew up in New York also, and her family was from Italy. And my dad worked for a company at that time when I was growing up called Aerodex, and he inspected jet engines for a living. He worked for that company for about 15 years, and then he went on to start a small trucking company. And then as a child growing up, I worked with my father, and we were hardworking people, and it was a wonderful experience as far as nature is concerned. Then I got to see the opposite take place. I got to see development come into place when I was between the ages of 16 and 18 years old. And that was a hard thing for me to live with, because what I saw was the beautiful natural beauty of Southeast Florida turn into what today they would call Miami.
Sure.
Concrete, total. Now, you know, of course there's neat things that the city has to offer, but I rather enjoy that style of life. And growing up as a boy, then I got with a company that transferred me out of the state, and I worked for a publishing company for 3 or 4 years, and my territory was the southeastern United States. So I was in almost every town and every city in the South. And then from there, I got into real estate and moved over to Houston and was selling new homes, and I got married, and then I went into dividing lots, buying big parcels of property and dividing them into lots and sold them for home sites. But I was really picky and fussy about the tree cutting issue when it came to these lots. So when people bought my home sites, I wrote into the deed that they couldn't cut down any more trees than what they needed just to build the house and about 20 feet outside the homes. So the trees had to maintain. My goal was, I was always green oriented, I guess you can say, before it was even popular. My goal was that 50 or 100 years from now, any properties that I had anything to do with would always still be heavily wooded and natural. And as far as I was concerned, up until 1988, purely was a business person, took care of my wife, my family, which was my wife at the time. And in 1988 is when the abduction scenario started. And that was when I was in Houston, and I was also traveling to North Carolina for business.
Now, you have been married and divorced, and I'm sure that these events that we're going to be speaking of tonight have impacted your jobs, your relationships, even your family interactions. Can you briefly discuss the personal impact that these events had on you?
Well, these beings, when they first came into play, were extremely intrusive. The MO was isolation, fear, and confusion. I was never invited. I was never asked if I would like to partake in any of that stuff. And as far as I was concerned, prior to 1988, these things weren't even possible. I've always been considered to be an honest, down-to-earth, truthful person. And when these things started happening, I told my family, and they rejected it. They thought, gee, Jim was going crazy. At the time, I was going to the church, and when I told the church, they thought it was demonic. My friends couldn't figure out what the heck was going on, and they figured maybe I lost it. But the difference between myself and better than 95 or 98% of almost all abductees is the fact that I've got the benefit of the curse. At the time it was a curse, but now I see it as a benefit of having almost 100% total recall. So whenever these abductions took place, in which I've seen over the years, they would always take the physical memory away from abductees, but in my case, they let me retain it. So having retained it and having all that detail and coming out with all this information in those early years, and that was back in 88, it was sort of like a living hell. So I call the first 6 years of the experiences traumatic, And
Jim, I don't mean to interrupt you.
Sure.
But why do you think they have made an exception with you, with giving you the privilege of 95% recollection?
I think it's because they were, there's various reasons that they even picked particular individuals. In my case, I learned that they had been following family lines. They follow family lines for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. The majority of these interactions have been with, for myself personally, have been with a species commonly referred to as grays. I think the problem that they have when they abduct people is the message isn't getting through. People are more in tune to the messenger, and they're more in tune to the experience, and any messages or anything that can be learned seem to be overshadowed by the fact of by the mere interaction fact. So in my case, the impact of the memory was almost, I think, experimental. I think they picked a handful of us globally in those days and let us maintain or retain the memory. And I got to tell you, I mean, there's just a lot of things about these non-human intelligent beings that are just put you in shock. They're traumatic. They're scary. They're a lot like us in a lot of ways, and they're a lot not like us in a lot of ways. And it's hard to deal with what they really are. And it took years for me to get comfortable with interacting with these things. So I don't want to sound scary. You know, whenever anybody asks me, Mel, about the first 6 years, it'll always sound like a horrific nightmare. And I break it down in three sections. The first 6 years were traumatic. The second 6 years, I started seeing a picture. And then in the last 6 to 7 years or so, a little longer than that, I see the agendas and I see where they're going.
But so we're talking about almost two decades of abduction.
Yeah, well, yep, slightly more than two decades. That's correct.
Now, you just mentioned that you believe that this happens through generations. Have you confirmed with your ancestors or your parents that they were actually abducted as well?
Well, an interesting scenario came up around the seventh or the eighth year of the experiences. In the first 6 years, my mother always remained silent. My father voiced the fact that he said these things are impossible, didn't want to know anything about it. And I learned the hard way, actually, within the first year, just to stop talking about these things. And everybody thought I was fine. You know, and then we're talking about 17, 20 years ago now, but
sure,
things really changed. But at that time, my mom just maintained silence and just kind of shook her head every time I talked about it. But to answer your question, it was around the seventh year. I was sitting out in the balcony with mom or her porch at her home at the time in Florida. I was visiting. And she said, you know, they're always nice to me. And I sort of knew what I thought she was talking about. I go, who is mom? She goes, the nice doctors, the aliens. She said that they put me on the gurney. They ask me how I'm doing. They check me up. They give me a checkup. They make sure that I'm healthy. They say nice things to me. My mother, in a lot of ways, she passed away recently, but my mother in a lot of ways...
Sorry to hear that.
Oh, thanks. It was quite childlike when it came to certain things, innocent. And then she spoke of them as being nice and kind. And I said, you know, to myself, I was about to give her to the third degree. I was about to say, Mom, you know, in those first 6, 7 years, you know, you kept your mouth shut. You supported the family and as if I was something wrong with your son instead of me telling the truth. And I said, all of a sudden, you're spilling the beans like this. And I wanted to give her the third degree. But I let her talk on, and I kept my mouth shut. And I decided it would be better just to see where she wanted to go with it. And basically, she ended it on a positive note. And from that point on, I never really brought it up with her again, except for the fact that I knew now, and she told me. And I felt it would be better not to go any further with it, that she has had experiences herself, and they were positive. So to answer your question, yeah, so I know at least my mother.
How do you separate real abductions from dreams, and when did you realize they were not dreams?
Well, when it first started, back in mid-1988, I kept having what I thought was a reoccurring dream. And the dream was always the same. I would have it two or three times a week, sometimes more often. A week would go by and I wouldn't have the same reoccurring dream, and then again I would have it several times a week, and that went on for a couple of months, and it was always the same thing. This is how it started. I was in my bed, something or some things were coming into my room. They were escorting me down the hallway into the guest room. We would walk through the window into the woods, across the lawn into the woods, and then they would bring me back the same way. And as these, what I thought were dreams, continued, one of them I woke up, so to speak, in the middle of, and I found that I was actually in the hallway. I was awake. I could hit myself. When I got into the guest room where they normally would walk me through the window, I got scared to death. And we walked through the window, and then I blacked out. Coming back, I would remember coming back through the window. Also, what was amazing was in our front yard, we had thousands of little honeysuckle flowers that used to be on the lawn, and they would stick to your feet. And we had a ground floor window in that guest room. And in after that one particular event that I woke up, so to speak, at, I went into the guest room, and I could see my footprints in the lawn. And I could see at one point where my heel was embedded in the lawn of my foot, a footprint, and the my toes and the ball of my feet were embedded in the carpet, and the flowers were stuck to the carpet where the ball of my feet was, and then I could see my footprints going into the carpet as if I walked through the window and half a foot was in the lawn. And then I knew that something very unnatural was taking place, that it wasn't a dream. Within a few days, I got abducted again, but when I got abducted that second time after that, that was a whole different world. There's two technologies that this particular species use to abduct you. One I call the easy way, where they escort you, and it's a dreamlike thing that I just described. And then the other way is what I call a hard way, is when their crafts are in flight or they're hovering, and they actually take you from point A to point B, and you feel and sense and see, and you're wide awake through the entire process, and it's horrifying. Over the months and years, you get used to it, and it doesn't bother you, but there's a sensation that takes place in the pit of your stomach. It starts to raise up to your upper torso. Your heart starts racing. It feels like it's racing 1,000 beats per minute.
Is it painful?
It's scary, and you feel like you're going to die. Then you become paralyzed. It's more scary. The sensations are just awful, but not necessarily pain. Then there's a loud, whirling, whipping sound in your head, and it gets louder and louder, and it's like you think your eardrums inside your head are going to burst. You black out, and then when you regain consciousness, you're at point B. Point B is inside a craft, and you are you. You are awake. You are there in the physical. You know you're not dreaming. You are breathing the air. You can pinch yourself. You can slap yourself. And you're interacting with these things face-to-face. So, Jim, it's a dream at that point.
What's happening from point A to point B? I know you're scared and you have all those feelings, but what is actually transpiring from point A to point B?
I know that, you know, it's pretty simple, but yet it's complicated. It's simple in a sense where point A is where you're at your home. You're in your home, maybe in the bedroom, in the living room, or you're laying down, or point A could be your car. Point B is on board a craft somewhere in space. And so what happens in between, I think when you feeling all these sensations, it must be some sort of a tractor beam, and it affects your metabolic system, it affects your body, it affects your mind. That's where the heart racing comes in. That's where a sensation you feel in your stomach working its way up to the torso. I think that's when it's got a hold of you, or it's grabbed you to pull you, literally. I call it being pulled from point A to point B. Also, during the course of that, you feel an extreme sense of acceleration. It feels like you're, instead of going up, you feel like you're being pulled down, and you feel like you're going down a roller coaster only 100 times faster. And the G-force...
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasproject.com. To listen to the rest and access all of our exclusive material, head over to the Veritas Plus member section or click the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the benefits with a 15-day free trial of FLFE today. No credit card required. If you'd like to get in touch with me, be a guest on the program, have a guest suggestion, or want to provide feedback, just click the contact button on our website at veritasproject.com. Thank you for listening to The Veritas Project, because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at veritasproject.com.